God is wonderful. He's kind. He's compassionate. He's loving. He's with us at all times. In fact, we are floating in this ocean of divinity called God or Brahman or consciousness. He's not only the Father in heaven, he's not only in the church or temple, but he's in every cell of our body. We are supported by him at all times. But you and I don't perceive it. We say, where is this God? And that is because of the years and years of ignorance and years and years of wrong understanding. But the Mahatmas, the great saints, the prophets, they saw that. They saw their oneness with God. They saw God everywhere. And this Divya Drishti, this divine vision, this cosmic vision, the saints have. Jesus had that when he said, if you see me, you see the Father in heaven. Mirabai had that. Tukaram had it. Swami Chinmayananda, our founder, had that experience. Shankaracharya. All of them saw that oneness, saw that cosmic being. It started with seeing the Lord in my heart as life. And then once you see that, then it becomes easier to see the Lord everywhere. But Arjuna, the student, you can see behind me, was not a Mahatma. He was not a great saint. He was not a prophet. He had not meditated for hours. He had studied to some extent the scriptures. But he was a person like us, a man of the world, out working, doing his duty to the best of his ability. Very honest, very nice person, very straightforward. So when he expressed the desire to the Lord, oh, I want to see you as that substratum of the whole reality. I want to see that consciousness which supports the whole universe, and I want to see the whole universe in you, in that one Lord who was his teacher. And that's when the Lord showed him this cosmic form that you all know, wherein he showed him that he alone is the substratum and the support of this whole universe, and the whole universe is in him. He supports everything. Everything emerges from him, is sustained in him, merges back into him. And there is nothing but he and he alone, the past, present, future. Not only these worlds that we see, the planets and the stars, but even the heavens, even the hells, the worlds of demons, the worlds of God, gods, the semi-gods, everything is sustained in that one. And that divine vision was given by the Lord out of compassion, out of love to the student, because the student says, I wish to see that divine form. And so that is the glory of this Lord, that when you ask him something with total love and surrender and you know, devotion, he does answer our prayers. Of course, you have to make yourself worthy. You cannot just say, I'm not going to do anything, sit and say, okay, God, give me $1 million. Not like that. But I think if you put in the effort, then God's grace is always there. It is always there. And if you just have to close your eyes and you feel his presence as life. It's very as simple as that. People say, where is God? I just say, close your eyes. He is with you at all times. The hand is moving because he's there. Even in a dark room, when there is nothing, it's a pitch dark room. How do you know you are there? Your eyes cannot see anything. Your ears cannot hear anything. But I know I am there. So that is God's presence. That is what. So feel him. And that's what Arjuna did. He asked for that and he saw that divine form. And that was very beautiful. In the beginning, he was all wonderstruck. Oh, I'm seeing all these beautiful things in you and all this whole, all the planets and all the gods and all the weapons and all the, even the perfumes and the flowers, everything I'm seeing. But then slowly God showed him that I am not only that, but I am also death. Because birth is in him and death is also in him. So it's not that that is something separate. That's why we personify God in our mythology as Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, the creator, the sustainer, and then the destroyer, the one who takes us away. And so Arjuna saw that form of that God, which was like, it was like a movie he was watching. And there he saw the wide open mouth of this being that he was seeing. And fire was coming out. And that's been described in the 11th chapter. And he could see the people like in a row just going into that form and getting destroyed and burning. But of course, that is needed. You know, death is required. If there was no death, then the world would be overpopulated. The dinosaurs would still be living. And we would not have this human, our grandfathers, great-great-grand, all of them, if they were continued to live, the world would be impossible to live. So the whole creation is that. Creation, and so Arjuna saw because they were on the brink of a war between good and evil, and he saw that all the soldiers were going into his mouth and were going to be killed, and his intellect couldn't handle that. First of all, he couldn't handle that terrible form that he saw, and also the grandeur of that, because an individual, our mind and intellect, all we can fathom is what we can see or what we have known. But when you are suddenly exposed to something that you are not prepared for, it's like a fifth grade student. She's sent into a physics class for a college student, and suddenly she's thrown all these quantum physics. She'll be lost. She'll say, where am I? So that's what happened to Arjuna. He was not prepared, but the Lord, out of his grace and compassion, showed it. So Arjuna developed a fear that I do not want to see this form anymore. I want to see your divine form, the sweet form of Krishna that you see up there. I want to see that form. I want to see the form that I knew, the form that I loved. And so, as the chapter is ending, the Lord said, okay, I'll show you my original form. Do not be afraid. That's what we studied last time. He says, do not be afraid. Please see my original form. And that's what we said. We had studied in the last verse. And also, just to quickly, for those who are a little bit new, the war was between the Pandavas who were good and the Kauravas who were evil. And Krishna and Arjuna are sitting in the chariot. Arjuna, of course, is the confused student, and Krishna is teaching him. And then in the palace, far away, about 30, 40 miles away, there is the king Dhritarashtra, who was the king of the evil Kauravas, who was the father of the evil Kauravas. And Sanjay is his minister, who had that same divine vision that Arjun had. And he could see what was happening in the battlefield 40 miles away. He had been given that by the Ved Vyas ji. And so he also saw this divine form. So only two people saw this form, even though the whole thousands of people were in the army, the Pandavas and the Kauravas were all there. Only Arjuna could see the form because he had been given the divine vision by Krishna. And Sanjay, even though he was sitting 30 or 40 miles away, could see that form because he had been given the divine vision by Ved Vyas ji. So that is a little summary of what we have studied so far. So having now seen this form, Arjuna is calming down. He's more happy. Okay, now things are back to normal. It's like when there is a tornado or a big storm, and then suddenly afterwards everything is quiet, how you feel relaxed, that's what Arjuna feels. And he says, having seen this form, I am now calmed down. He says, Sacheta prakritim gataha. My mind is now calm. So now we'll do verse number 52, chapter 11. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Sudurdarshamidam rupam drishtavanasi yanmama deva apyasya rupasya nityam darshana kankshinah. So, sudur darsham idam rupam. My idam rupam. Rupam means this form, this cosmic form. So, which is dur darsham. It is very hard to see. As we have said, only two people could see it. but also in history, only the realized masters have seen that. So this, it needs a lot of effort, a lot of penance, a lot of mental preparation. The mind and intellect has to be ready. Durdarshamidam. So this form is difficult to see. But then he uses the word Su. Su Swami Chinmayananda ji says that Su means auspicious. So it is an auspicious form. How about suddenly if you were to see the Lord standing in front of you, how happy we would be. So it is an auspicious form, but it is hard to see. So another interpretation of Su Durdarshamidam is Su means also means it's like an emphasis. So Su Durdarsham means that which is extremely hard to see. Rupam Drishtavan Asi Yan Mama. This form of mind, Drishtavan, has been, is the past tense, has been seen, is the passive tense, has been seen, Yan Mama, Yat Mama. This form of mind has been seen by you. But what is special about it? You know, it's okay. So what if I saw the form of the Lord? What is special? He says, Deva. Deva means even the gods in heaven. By gods, we don't mean the total Brahman or the consciousness, but the demigods. Like the god Indra, who is the god of thunder and rain. Or there is god of Varuna, the god of the ocean. Vayu, the god of the air, the god of the sun, the god of the moon. So these celestial powers that run the whole universe, that run the whole creation, and they live in heaven. He says, even they, api, even they, asya rupasya, of this form, nityam darshana kangshina. Nityam means always, darshana kangshina means they always wish to see, darshana kangshina. So even the gods in heaven, you might think, oh, it's so wonderful, they are sitting up in heaven, and they have all the pleasures and they have so much power, and it is said they live for thousands of years and they can run the whole universe. They can control the sun, the moon, the air, the rain. And still they are not able to see this form. That is true. Why? Because heaven is not the ultimate goal. The rishis in our Upanishads had understood that heaven is just a place, is like a vacation place. It's like Hawaii. You go to Hawaii for a while and then after your money runs out, you come back, or after your vacation is up. So heaven is a place you go to enjoy your good deeds. So if you have done good deeds, you go enjoy them in heaven. If you have done evil deeds, you will go suffer in hell. But then after your time is up, after your vacation is over, people in heaven say, okay, now time to go back. And so they put you in a new body and, send you back. So they send your subtle body back, and then you enter a mother's womb and then you start your journey again. So how about these gods in heaven? So they say that these gods in heaven have so much power because they have done tremendous amount of good deeds. And that's why they are very intelligent. They are very powerful. They are able to do so many miracles and do so many things. But in fact, they say that they lived there thousands of years, but the fact is that they have done their tapas, their good deeds, to enjoy heaven. They have not done it to realize the truth. If they had done their tapas to realize the truth and know who I am, then they do not need to go to heaven and live there for thousands of years. They just merge with the infinite and become one, and then they do not need to. If they can continue to enjoy or live, or they don't have to. Because they become, then their individuality merges and then they become one with that consciousness. That's why they said Indra, who is the god of all the heavens, when he wanted to learn the truth, he had not yet realized, even though he's the god of all, he's the king of all the gods, he's the king of all the gods, and he's the king of heaven called Indra. So all these demigods are ruled by him, and the whole heaven is run by him. So when he wanted to learn the truth, he went and sat in front of a human guru and sat there for 99 years. It is said he took him 99 years to learn the truth. So we'll say, oh my, what about us? We don't have 99 years. But we have a wonderful teacher, a guru like Swami Chinmayananda. So if we follow it, and even if we don't realize in this life, best is if we can, of course, but otherwise it's okay, as long as you're on the journey. So there is no sorrow, there is no depression. So he says even the gods in heaven have not seen this form, even though they have enjoyed the pleasures, even though they have so much power, but even they could not see what Arjuna was seeing at the time, this beautiful form, and what Sanjay was seeing. Swamiji, in his commentary, in his tape, he says that why is this form so hard to see? Why was people not able to see this form? So he says it's like there are different states of consciousness. Like there is a deep sleep state, there is a dream state, there is a waking state. Now you cannot be in two states at the same time. Like say I'm dreaming, and in my dream I am with my parents, say in India, and I'm in that apartment and I'm talking to them and sitting with them. And I am totally in that dream. I am seeing all my other family members and New Delhi and all. But in that dream, can I see that I am really not in New Delhi? I am sleeping in my house in Bakersfield. And I am in my bed and I can, in my whole house. I can't. But Krishna, with his divine grace, was able to show him that. It was like if I was sitting in my dream in New Delhi, talking to my parents, and suppose God or my guru appeared and said, you know, you are not actually in New Delhi. You are actually sleeping in your bed in Bakersfield. And I say, yes, I can see very clearly. I can see myself in New Delhi. I can see my parents and I can see my brother and sister. But at the same time, I can see that I am actually sleeping in Bakersfield, and I see my house in Bakersfield, and I see all the rooms, and I see my wife sleeping next to me, and I see the backyard. That was the state of Arjuna, that even though he was in this world, he was seeing the war, but at the same time, he was seeing that higher state of consciousness. Because they say there are four states, the dream, the first of all, the deep sleep, the dream, the waking, and the fourth state beyond the waking is called Turiya, or the higher state, which the realized masters live in that state. You and I, we are stuck in this waking state, but the realized masters stay in that state. They are always in that state. So Arjuna, living and walking and talking in this world and seeing the war, he was able to still see that higher state of consciousness. He was still able to see that the fourth state. So that was the beauty of him. Like I said, you cannot be in your dream watching the dream and still see your waking state. Or like if you are in a waking state, you cannot see the dream, though some people may be doing it right now, but by and large, in a waking state, you cannot dream. You cannot say, I'm awake and I'm in deep sleep. So similarly, once you are realized to that higher truth, then these great sages and saints, they live in that higher state of consciousness. They still function in this. It's not that they become useless, but they become the prophets. They become the great masters. Like Eckhart Tolle, in fact, I was listening to him. He's another realized master whom I had the good fortune to spend a lot of time with, one time a week, another time a whole weekend. And so one time he said that, reason I am cutting down, he used to give a lot of seminars and talks. He says, because when I deal too much with the world and interact, I kind of slip from my, he kind of admitted that. Because because they are still in the human state, they may be realized, but the human weaknesses are there. So he says, when I deal with people and money, and because to organize seminars, you have to organize, you have to arrange, and even though people are doing it for him. So he says, that's why I want to cut down, because it's difficult to stay. But then there are other Mahatmas like Swami Chinmayananda, who even after having realized the truth, he used to travel throughout the world and every day deal with different people and give talks and interact. So But anyway, the point of the matter is that there are different states. And Arjuna, even in this waking state, was able to experience that highest truth, which nobody else has done unless you have realized the truth. And this reminds me of a beautiful story. There is one example where in a waking state, people could experience that highest truth. And that, when I was reading the life of Tukaram, those of you who know of Tukaram, he was a great saint in the state of Maharashtra. Mumbai, where, you know, a lot of us went in the yatra, is in Maharashtra state. So this great saint Tukaram was a great devotee of Lord Vitthala, who is form of Vishnu, Krishna, and always used to remember him, and there are several miracles associated with his life. And he used to be all the time, even when he was at work, he used to be thinking of Vitthala and composing songs and singing his glories. And the beauty of his songs were that they were not only songs of devotion, but they had profound knowledge. You could get the knowledge of the Upanishads and the Vedas through his songs. And it is said that when it was time for him to leave this body, he said, okay, it's time for me. So he went close to the river where he used to go and sing his songs. And he said, now it's time for me to leave my body. And it is said that a chariot came down with the angels from the sky and stood there. And they said, okay, sir, it's time for you to go with us. Now, the chariots come for all everybody. They say that when you die, in your subtle body leaves, either if you're going to go to heaven, the chariot comes with the angels that takes you to heaven. Or if you have done evil deeds and you're destined to go to hell, then the Yamaraja, who is the god of death, he sends his assistants with a black bull. And you are tied to that black bull and carried to hell. So that depends. So when you leave this body and when you're in that subtle state, before you have gone, you have to watch around and see, am I seeing angels or am I seeing the black bull? Then you'll know where you are going. That's a good sign. but that only happens in the subtle state. It happens with every soul. They say that the soul is carried to the ultimate destination. But you have to leave this body and go into the subtle state, which is the mind and intellect, into the subtle body, and there then you are carried to this. But Tukaram, interestingly, in his gross body, he was sitting there, and this chariot, normally which nobody sees, and all the people saw, and the chariot was there, and they said, okay, sir, come on. So it is said he was the only person who in his actual gross body was transported to heaven. In his living, this flesh and blood body, he said, okay, I'm ready to go. He sat on the chariot. But the funny part of this story is he asked his wife, you know, his wife had been with him her whole life, and he used to often wouldn't work, and he would be just praying to the Lord, and a lot of times he wouldn't fulfill all his family duties, and she used to be frustrated with him. But now he said, look, you have been with me for last 30-40 years, and I love you, and you have taken care of me. You can come with me. Let's go to heaven together. And he asked the angels, can my wife come too? You know, normally they would say no. He said, yep, you know, she's your wife. If you say it, we'll take her, and she can go to heaven and live in heaven forever. And so he asked the wife, do you want to go? She said, no. No, I still have so many things to do. I have to get the kids married, and then I have grandkids to take care of. And no, I'll go later. So the point is that she had this wonderful opportunity. But anyway, the point of this whole story is that you cannot be in two states of consciousness at the same time, but Arjuna experienced that. You can see here, he's sitting in the chariot with Krishna. At the same time, he is seeing that. So that's why Krishna says, this form of mind is very difficult to see. Very few people have seen it. That's the essence of this verse. If anybody has any comments or anything they disagree with, yes. No. I didn't say. What he meant was no one of the ability of Arjuna. But other prophets had seen it. You know, Krishna appeared on earth a few thousand years ago. But there had been, the Vedas were written much before Krishna appeared. Krishna, of course, is the immortal consciousness. But Krishna appeared on earth in the Dwapar Yuga. But in Treta Yuga, Ram was there, and before that there were great rishis. So they had all realized the truth. But no one of the ability of Arjuna had seen it. You understand what I'm saying? Arjuna was not a saint, was not a prophet, had never meditated. So it was, he was like you and me. So nobody of the level of Arjuna had seen it. We're not saying that there were no prophets before Arjuna. We're not saying that. But prophets, none other at the, of the level of Arjuna. That's what Gurudev explains that in his commentary, that Arjuna was at the level where you and I are. He was a man of war. He was a warrior. He was a king. He had spent his whole life in training. He had never sat down and meditated. He had never heard the details of the Upanishads. He had some spiritual knowledge. He had been to a guru. But he had not developed that in one-pointed integration of the mind and intellect, which is required to realize the truth. Why do you and I don't see it? Because our mind is still many, which will come in the later verses. So we are not, we are at the level of Arjuna or maybe lower. But you have to first come to the level of Arjuna and then you can become. So nobody of the level of Arjuna who was in that state of mental disintegration had realized the truth. Or it happened again. The Lord is infinite. I mean, why can't the same thing happen in different parts of the world at different times? No, it's these incidents of these prophets have appeared again and again. The truth is the same, but it sounds different because the prophet is speaking to the people of that time in their language. And so Jesus was talking to fishermen in Galilee. You know, Muhammad was talking to some warriors in the desert in Arabia, while Krishna was talking to Arjuna in the battlefield. Or the Upanishads, if you read the Kaivalya Upanishad, like you are, all of you are doing Kaivalya Upanishad in the Tuesday class, these Upanishads were taught to students who were intellectually very advanced. So they didn't need to tell them any stories. They just straight away told them the truth. So depending on the level of the student and depending on the situation and the circumstances, the same truth had to be taught in different languages at different times in history to different people at different situations. So it appears different, but the knowledge is the same. The knowledge in the Bible is as much as valid as in the Quran, as in the Bhagavad Gita, as in Buddha's teachings. But the problem is, A, it is told to different people, so appears different, and B, it is interpreted differently by the people who are teaching it. And so that is why sometimes these teachings are misunderstood and misinterpreted. True. Yeah, in the Greek mythology, they have same gods and goddesses too. And gods and goddesses are married, and they have, and same, there's god of thunder, and then Zeus is the one who has the lightning bolt, and then they have god of rain, and of sun and moon, and all that. Yes, so it's all mythology, it's all story. But in my opinion, there are multiple worlds. You know, it's not a mythology or a story, but there are worlds where these gods do reside. And that's what in our teaching, they say there are Chaudeh Lok, there are 14 worlds. Earth is one, there are 7 above us and 6 below us. So total of 14 worlds, and the upper are the higher worlds, you know, where you can go higher and higher. And heaven is not the top. Heaven is probably the second or third level. Then above heaven, they have Brahma Lok, and they have Vishnu Lok, Vaikuntha. And even above that is the total consciousness, Brahman. So, and similarly, of course, there are different grades of hell depending on how many bad deeds we have done. So you will get hell number 1 or 2 or 3 or 6. So there are Chaudeh Lok. There are 14 worlds, and they are populated by different. And depending on your good deeds, you will go to the higher and higher heavens. But then they say that once you reach Brahma Lok, the realm of Brahmaji, which is way above this heaven that we are talking about, Indra and all live, then there, once you go there, then you don't have to be born again. Then there, Brahmaji himself, who is the original teacher, will teach you, or other great saints or realized masters will teach you, and then you will slowly evolve to become one with that. If you have not realized the truth in this life, and you have acquired so much merit that you can go to that. So the idea is that, whether there are these worlds or not, but the idea is that there is an evolutionary stage that I must go through, live my life and try to realize in this life itself, or at least do enough good deeds so that I then can continue my spiritual journey. So it's not hopeless. Death is not the final. So then death does not have that same fear. So okay, it's okay. It's like a station. Okay, I spent the night. Now I'm going to go on. Death has no fear for them. Yeah, right now in us, the subtle body is the mind and the intellect. That is called the subtle body. And vasanas is the causal body. Just to quickly summarize this chart for those who maybe are not familiar, right now we have this body, mind and intellect. With the body, I perceive the objects of the world. With the mind, I feel the emotions. And with my intellect or intelligence, I think of the thoughts and concepts. Intellect also decides what is right, what is wrong. Then V stands for vasanas. Vasanas are my habits or tendencies which influence my behavior. So the subtle body is the mind and intellect. That is the gross body which we can see. The mind and intellect is the subtle body. And what you are talking, the nadis, those are the pranas. Those are the pranas, which is in between the body and the mind. So it is in between the gross and the subtle body. It's the pranas which kind of control, like the breath and the cardiovascular, not the pumping heart, but the energy which causes the heart to beat. So those are that's between the gross and the subtle body. So there is a gross body, there is a subtle body of the mind and the intellect, and the vasanas constitute the causal body. Vasanas are the habits which make me do what I do, the tendencies, the characteristics, the habits. And vasanas, we say, are not only of this life, but of multiple lifetimes. We have accumulated them. And so the goal of spirituality is to reduce my vasanas, my habits, and make my negative habits into positive habits, my negative vasanas to positive. Like even the desire to study, the desire to help, the desire to be loving, compassionate, is also a desire. It's also a vasana. It is good. Or the other is the evil, the desire to be mean, to be hateful, to be greedy, to be selfish. So the idea is to slowly remove even the desire to serve, or the desire to help is still a desire. So ultimately you go beyond all desires to Om, which is the total consciousness, Brahman, which is the life in me. So that is how you slowly evolve. You slowly become, from a bad person, you become a good person. And then slowly even the desire to be good is gone. Because then it does not mean that the person is not good anymore. But to be good is no longer a desire. Like I might say, I desire to serve the world. Okay, so that is a desire. And then I serve the world. But when I become a great saint, like Swami Chinmayananda or Shankaracharya or Jesus, there is no desire to serve. Service happens spontaneously. Jesus did not sit down and say, okay, from now on, I'm going to give a sermon and a lot of people are going to come and be benefited. No. From his mouth, the teachings just flowed, and whoever heard him benefited from it. So these people do not work out of a desire. They are so complete that even the desire to serve is gone. And it is a spontaneous act of service. These people don't sit down and plan that they are going to serve, or they are going to speak, or they are going to teach. It happens spontaneously. So that is the state. So there is a stepwise evolution from bad to become good. And once you become realized, then even that desire to be good is gone, because it is spontaneously. Like God does not have a desire to serve or a desire to be good. He is goodness. Goodness just flows from him. So they become one with God. So, that's why the prayer of St. Francis, O Father, where there is good, evil, let me be good. From anger, let me evolve to love and compassion and all that. I don't remember the whole prayer, but that is the typical prayer of a spiritual aspirant. That where there is evil, let me substitute it for good. If there is anger, let me substitute love. If there's hatred, let me substitute compassion. So that is a beautiful prayer, because that tells you how you have to spiritually evolve. I think everybody should read it. I read it a while back, so I don't remember all the lines, but it's a beautiful prayer. See, that's what he says. When you die to yourself, you're born to eternal life. Die does not mean dying physically. But when the ego dies, when the perceiver, when the individuality dies, and the person, while living on this life itself, can become one with that Brahman, and that is called a realized soul, where while the person is still alive, he or she has become already one with that eternal consciousness. So that is what he means. It's a beautiful prayer. Thank you.
It's always a revealing dream, and this is something that's supposed to be
true. But I think when they use the word dream there, what they mean is not the dream of ignorance, but the dream of, that means having a higher goal or a higher purpose in life. So that is what, and once you realize that, and you say, I have reached my dream, or I have accomplished my dream, or I have got my dream. So there, when they mean the word dream, that is the same word of English, but used in a different context. Here, dream does not mean the dream of sleep. That is the dream of ignorance. When I'm sleeping and dreaming, I'm ignorant. I'm creating my mental world. But here, when Martin Luther King says, realize your dreams, what he means is your aspirations, your goals. So their dream is used positively in a sense of having a positive goal and reaching it. Yeah. Yeah, but I think, if an individual has a dream or a desire to realize the self and become one with that, that in my opinion is the highest. Because once you realize the truth and you become one with that, then you have gone up beyond all the dreams. Then you wake up to that highest. Then there is no world, there is no dream. I mean, there is a world, but the world does not have much importance. That's when you become a prophet. That's when you become a Shankaracharya or a Chinmayananda. Because you have gone beyond even that universal dream of serving mankind. You have gone beyond that. That is, to me, that is higher. Yeah, he may or may not have, but he was at least an evolved person. Again, see, yeah, we don't know. You know, you don't know. Like the person walking on the street, you know, like the homeless person walking on the street, he may be a realized soul, you know, and he has totally given up the world and he's just living. Like the Jad Bharat, you know, the story of Jad Bharat, where he was considered by everybody as to be a fool, and he was a realized. So, yeah. Only a realized person can know when another person is realized. Or you can know yourself. Yeah. But you can know yourself that you are, or another realized master can. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.